Good evening, Cuse Nation, and welcome to the Upstate Orange Podcast on FingerLakes1.tv and YouTube. We're coming at you live inside the FingerLakes1.com studios in downtown Seneca Falls, New York. It's Sunday, February 15th, 2015, and tonight we'll be talking about Syracuse's loss to Duke on Saturday in the Dome. And can the Orange get to 20 wins before the regular season, and unfortunately Syracuse's season, comes to an end? The Upstate Orange Podcast is brought to you by Generations Bank, with locations in Auburn, Farmington, Geneva, Phelps, Seneca Falls, Union Springs, and Waterloo. Be sure to check out their mobile banking app or visit them online at mygenbank.com. And by Madej, Miris, and Ricky, your hometown personal injury attorneys. If you've been injured and deserve compensation, call the Finger Lakes Personal Injury Hotline at 315-568-0911. That's 315-568-0911. Or visit them online at MadejMirisRicky.com. Well, as if you listened in last week, you know that one of our co-hosts, Virk, was going to be down in William & Mary at his alma mater this week, taking in some basketball with some former teammates, unable to be here tonight. But fortunately, I'm not alone, as I have been a couple times this season. I'm joined by the professor, Brad Connor. How you doing, Brad?
Happy Sunday evening, Jim.
And I don't know what the weather like is in Cincinnati, but it is -8 out right now, and I'm a little concerned about getting home from the studio safely tonight. What's the weather like in Cincinnati?
It is a brisk 11 degrees.
Wow, that's balmy. Balmy. And kudos to the 34,000-something fans that were at the Dome yesterday for Duke. It was pretty nasty out yesterday afternoon as well. But Orange Nation still turned out. You know, the team's on probation, self-imposed probation, and just as many people as you can legally fit in that Dome were there, same amount as last year when we were, you know, riding the undefeated streak.
Yeah, that was impressive. I mean, the fact that obviously this team is a different version than what we saw last year. I mean, last year this team was number one in the country. Last year the Duke game was frankly a spectacle. You know, they'd never played Duke in the Carrier Dome, and it was just sort of an event. And this year it was, you know, it was frankly just another game, but it was a great game and a big game, and people still love to see it, even though we know how the season's going to end.
Yeah, and you know what? I was really proud of the way we played, and I feel bad for Rhett Christmas, and I feel bad for the whole team. That's kind of one I think we needed if we were going to get to 20 wins, which I think is really one of the only goals that this team has left this year, is to get to that 20-win mark, as Boeheim's seems to do year in and year out. I guess we'll talk all about it with our Big Five questions. And we'll start out with the first question of the week, and that was Rakeem Christmas outplayed by Duke's Okafor? And I think the answer to that is pretty obvious, except with a caveat of I just feel like it was just a tough shooting day for Rak. He had so many shots kind of roll in and out that he normally makes, and I really think he played a good game. People are saying, well, Christmas had one of his poorest games of the year. I didn't see that. I saw him playing a good game. He purposely wasn't contesting as many shots early as you might think he would if we had a little more help on the bench, or if like Jeremy Grant or DeJuan Coleman were on the team. And you know, I thought Christmas played a good game and just had a tough shooting night. I don't know. Is that how you see it, Brad?
Yeah, I mean, to your first question, there's no question that Okafor outplayed Rakeem Christmas, and Okafor is one of the best freshman in the country, if not one of the best players in the country, so that's nothing to hang your head over. I would say, you know, Christmas was 5-for-17 from the field. I will say that I'm not going to completely chalk that up to just bad luck. I think Duke played him very, very well inside. You know, defensively, they played him as well as you can play Rickey and Christmas, I think. They didn't let him catch it deep as frequently as he does against some of these lesser teams. When he turned, he'd always had a guy in his face. He had guys flying at him. Like, I think they game planned very, very well for Rickey and Christmas. And I think a lot of the shooting woes he had were attributable to the defense. Now, I mean, there were some shots that were in and out. But, I mean, he was short on everything. And at some point, you have to just, you know, as a player, if you have that tendency, then you make the adjustment. And, to me, it felt like they were forcing him into shots that he wasn't comfortable taking. And, you know, by result, he wasn't succeeding.
Yeah, I obviously got to give Duke some credit. Like I say, though, I just felt that if it was another day, Rack would have had 18, 20 points. But it wasn't.
I think where I was disappointed with him was on the rebounding. He only came away with 6 rebounds. That you need more rebounds from Rickey and Christmas, definitely in a game like this. Especially when Duke's they're putting up a lot of shots and there was a lot of back and forth, and Roberson had another great rebounding night, but Christmas had as many rebounds as Benajay, and I shouldn't expect that from a guy who is a potential first team All American center. His assist total was as high as we've seen. He was great, finding open guys and at the top of the key, and he was distributing very, very well, but he wasn't as active on the rebounds. That was a bit disappointing to me. I mean, the shots aren't going to fall, but the rebounding can always be there, and that was one kind of, Okafor had 13 rebounds, so he was definitely getting it done on the glass.
And not only 5 of 17 from the field, but 1 of 3 from the line, too, which is also a little worse than you expect. He had a couple of key free throws late that we could have used. I'm not about to put this loss on Rat Christmas, but if he kind of does what he has been doing all year, then I think we win that game. And it's the frustrating thing about this team is that, we can play a top 5 team. This is 2 top 10 teams we've played right down to the wire, basically, Villanova and Duke. But yet we're, have 9 losses and obviously banned from the postseason, but if we weren't banned, we'd be squarely on the bubble. But that's kind of the college basketball this year, Brad. I mean, Pittsburgh beat North Carolina, Louisville lose. I mean, the ACC especially just seems to be a lot of parity outside everybody but Virginia.
Yeah, it sort of seems that way. It does. I would agree. With the mid-tier of the ACC, the bottom of the ACC is bad, and I don't think anybody can argue that. But I do think that you're seeing the mid-tier of the ACC occasionally winning some of those games. There are very few, extraordinary teams. Virginia is, I think, Duke can be, and I think generally speaking are. Louisville, I'm not, they it comes and goes with them. Carolina, obviously, same thing. Notre Dame, I mean, you don't lose by 30 to a conference foe and say you're playing at your peak level. So I think there's definitely wins to be had out there. I think Syracuse can come away with 1 or 2 of those types of victories down the stretch. It's just they just struggle down in late games. They just do.
Tired. A lot of it's fatigue.
We've been lucky that they haven't over the course of the last several years, and they've had good leaders and good go-to guys. And this year, the Villanova game comes to mind. Obviously, this one, the Carolina game, where it was close late, and they just let them pull away. It's maybe it's leadership. Maybe it's just not having that sort of presence at the guard spot late games. I mean, there's a lot of things that they can kind of point to, but it's just that they struggle against good teams in the late game.
Well, you mentioned a go-to guy, and we talk about Benajay's amazing game, and that brings us to the question too, and that is Michael Benajay our go-to guy next year? Is he like the prototypical Boeheim senior leader? I mean, he looks to me like he is. He was the best player on the court yesterday, maybe. And that includes Okafor and everybody for Duke, I thought. He was outstanding.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. They went away from him in the second half. He didn't look for a shot as much, I thought, in the second half. First half, he was tremendous. And then, late game, he was able to get to the rim pretty easily a couple of times. He can be that guy. You heard the announcers, Billis and Shulman. I mean, they're saying straight up, star of this team next year and should be the leader of this team. And I don't disagree. I think that he and I've said it for weeks, this team goes as he goes. You know, he's kind of the glue guy, but he's kind of the guy that is, you know, when he does well, the team can rally behind him, and when he does poorly, the team collectively, I think, struggles.
Yeah, well, you know, on this show, we try to, like, say, oh, this player reminds me of that player and this player. And, you know, Binajay, I haven't been able to make a connection with him until yesterday. When I was watching him yesterday, I said, you know who he reminds me of? Lawrence Moten. Binajay reminds me of Moten. High praise, right?
Yesterday's game, I would agree. In yesterday's game, I would agree. I mean, you know, Lawrence Moten was as smooth a shooter as they've had. And, you know, Binajay, the way he's knocking down threes, that's
I'm
shocked when I see him, you know, as proficient as he's been from the three-point arc. But, I don't know, Moten's one of the best players in the history of this program.
Oh, I don't think Binajay's legacy would be there.
I saw a lot of Wes Johnson in him last night, actually.
Yeah, that's a good comparison, too. I just think the way he seems like Moten to almost move at half speed but get full speed results. You watch him and you're like, you know, he doesn't seem to be he seems to be ultra under control out there, which is something he didn't look like earlier in the year. And scoring from a variety of places, whether it's a pull-up jumper, whether it's taking it to the hole or shooting a three. The only thing I don't want to see him do anymore is try for those highlight reel dunks because they never seem to work out for him. But yeah, you know, I mean,
he's kind of the anti Caleb Joseph right now. Like Caleb Joseph will give you high energy and he'll be all over the place. And in a game like against BC, he'll produce. But yeah, I mean, you want him to be steady and consistent, and that's what we're getting from Binajay.
Yeah, and then next year, obviously, that is going to be a necessity, I think. And you know, we know about the great recruits coming in, but if history has taught us anything as Syracuse fans, it's that don't believe the hype on the recruits. Let's look at guys that we have, you know, right here in front of us now, that because they're the ones that are probably going to play a key role next year. So we got Binajay coming back and looking like he's ready to step up and be that leadership type of guy, that All-American type of guy. And that's good. That's good. And
yeah, I mean, this team needs leadership. We've said it from the beginning. And as much as Rakeem Christmas has tried to be that guy, it's tough for a center to be your team leader. And, you know, he just doesn't have the ball in his hand enough. And I think Binajay is a guy that can have the ball in his hand every possession next year and certainly down the stretch this year. And those are the kinds of guys, you know, if they have a voice for themselves and they can, you know, rally the team, I think those are the guys that their teammates look toward. And really that is the biggest void in this team for next year, that I think Binajay can be that guy.
Yeah, let's hope so. And, you know, a lot of what we're going to be doing on the way out here on the podcast these last few weeks are going to be talking about next year. And so that brings me to question three, and that's Tyler Roberson, finally a sophomore, has stepped up and established themselves as a perennial force for the Orange. And, you know, Roberson, I get excited when thinking about what he's going to be like next year after another summer, you know, of work and growth and development. And he was phenomenal yesterday against some of the better big men in the country, you know, Tyler Roberson. Is he ready next year to dominate?
He was as aggressive last night offensively as I've seen him, obviously, in 2 years. I mean, he was attacking the basket. He was going after everything. He was everywhere. It was fantastic to see. I loved that version of Tyler Roberson. I didn't like the version of Tyler Roberson I saw against BC, the one that played 11 minutes and missed both his shots and had 1 point and 4 rebounds in 11 minutes. I didn't like that version.
So, but I'd rather see him rise to the occasion against Duke than
against a team like BC that he should at least do what he did against Duke. So there's an effort thing there with him. I don't think he necessarily brings it night after night after night. And hopefully there's a maturity thing that improves itself next year. I don't know. He's got all the athletic ability and he's got the skill. And
I think it's a comfort level.
If he can be that guy, then yeah. I mean, you could certainly expect 15 and 10 from him every night.
Yeah, and I think it's a comfort level. I think he's starting to reach that comfort level and feeling comfortable in the zone on defense and, you know, not being second-guessing himself on every move he makes on offense. He still, you know, had passing up wide open jumpers from, you know, 16, 17 feet. And when he did take one yesterday, it was short, you know, as he tends to be. But man, what a beast on the rebounds and what a beast, finishing yesterday in close and with, especially with Christmas struggling, you know. Now maybe Brad, part of that's because they were paying so much attention to Christmas, but regardless, I am really excited about Roberson. So
it's a little bit of pick your poison, I guess, but yeah, I mean, he obviously has it in him, you know, and if he decides he wants to be a dominant force inside, I think it's truly up to him.
Yeah, and I, like you say, another summer, you know, I should be even more improvement. I think next year he's ready to go for his, what will be his junior year. And, you know, speaking of improvement, how about Caleb Joseph? Do you feel like he's improving? Because I feel like he's improving. I feel like he's got a long way to go. Still can't understand why he can't close out on shooters on defense. But overall, feeling a little more comfortable with Caleb out there. And I can see a world where we enter next year with him as our starting point guard. But he needs to continue to improve this year. And then obviously improve in the offseason. What do you think? Do you think he's improving?
I think he is. I mean, it would be hard not to. He came in and didn't really do much at all. So every little bit you get from him, every bit of learning that he has, it just makes him that much more valuable this year and next year. And, you know, he shows glimpses, right? I mean, he obviously played a great game against BC, took a bit of a step back last night, but that's going to happen. I mean, Duke's got elite guards. And there's, you know, it'd be hard to expect him to outplay those guys. But, if he picks his spots, if he doesn't try and do too much and he lets the game come to him, I think he can he's getting better. I think the defensive end is where he struggles. And, you know, I thought a couple times last night, like, if somebody makes a three in his area of the zone, Boeheim just lays into him every time.
Oh yeah.
While some of them I think are Caleb Joseph's fault, like he's not getting out on shooters, not making the rotation. Sometimes they just make a shot, you know, and Caleb Joseph hears about it all the time. Like he can't catch a break on defense. And granted, some of that's on him, but I think some of it, I mean, if the same exact situation, you know, Trevor Cooney doesn't rotate quickly enough, he's not hearing the same thing that Caleb Joseph
No,
did.
You're
like,
right.
I think
you're right.
I think he's sort of a punching bag a little bit for Boeheim on the, you know, the frustration he sees on the defensive end. Like, I think he just takes it out on Caleb Joseph a bit more than most for some reason.
Yeah, we've
always
seen.
Has that guy, you know?
Yeah, he always has somebody, one or two guys that, you know, I got to admit that the first half when he got pulled, when he left the guy open in the corner, I mean, that's just, he was confused. You know, it's not like he's intentionally trying to leave guys open, but he had to make a choice between the guy in the corner and the other guy. But Cooney was rotating for the guy in the wing, and he should have stayed in the corner, but he gave him wide open three
right.
And buried it.
Yeah. But in the second half, the same thing happened. He made the rotation. He was on up the top of the key, and He busted it off to the left wing, and, you know, he got there, I thought, and he had a shot over his outstretched arm, and so Boeheim lit into him again.
Yeah, he did. Well, trial by fire, you know, hopefully he learns from this and gets better, you know, and then we're going
to. You know, Boeheim used to do the same with Rakeem Christmas, and he did the same with Tyler Roberson. You know, remember Rakeem Christmas as a freshman, boy. He couldn't catch the same thing. He couldn't catch a break. Anytime anybody scored on the inside, he was getting into Christmas like nobody's business. And now he's the best center in the country, one of the top three or four centers in the country. You know?
Yeah, you remember him when he would come out? He would start and come out, you know, almost immediately every single game. You know,
he'd make that one mistake, and a minute later, he's gone. You don't see him again until after halftime.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to question five, and this is the big one for me because this is kind of what I'm thinking of heading forward is the team's goal, and that's, can we win 20 games? Boeheim's known for winning 20 games year in and year out, and, we need to win four more to get there, and I look at our schedule, we could maybe not win any. But we maybe could win four. We got Louisville on Wednesday at home. Then we go at Pitt. Pitt's in the dome. So we got two home games, Louisville and Pitt to start. Then we go at Notre Dame, at Duke, then Virginia in the dome, and then at NC State. And you know, I can't look at any one of those games and say it's a sure win. And I can't look at, although I could look at any game in the whole schedule this year and say it's a sure win. But it is a tall task. Can we win four of these last six and be a 20-win team at least in this kind of lost season?
I don't see how that's even in the realm of possibility. I really don't, as much as I would love to. Like, I've been doing the math on this for a while because I was wondering the same thing. And, you know, you sort of point to games that look like they could be wins, and then you sort of see at Duke, and you see at Notre Dame, and you see UVA, and you just shrug your shoulders. How can they do any of that when their best win this year is against Iowa?
Yeah.
How does this team beat a good team? Because they haven't done it yet. They honestly have not done it yet. Iowa's 15-10 or 16-10. They're not a good team.
Right.
You know, what's the second best win this team has?
Oh,
Georgia
geez.
Tech, Florida State. You know,
did we lost
BC,
Miami?
Wake Forest.
Yeah.
I mean, here's their wins in the ACC so far. They beat BC twice. They beat Virginia Tech twice. They beat Florida State, Georgia Tech, and Wake Forest in overtime. That is not a good list of victories right there. They haven't beaten anybody good. It'd be Long Beach. It'd be Cornell. It'd be Colgate, Louisiana Tech, Holy Cross. I mean, there's nothing to hang your hat on here.
Barely beat Louisiana Tech in the dome.
And we expect that same, Louisiana Tech by two. We're lucky.
But don't you feel like, that's the thing that's crazy, though, is that, you know, we survive against Virginia Tech at Virginia Tech and at the dome, play all these close games, and then we go to Villanova and give it away, and then take a top five team like Duke or a team like Carolina and really play with them until the end. It just seems like it's got to be a fine line. And I wonder at this point in the season, you know, how much they're missing Chris McCullough. You know, he would have hopefully improved, you know, as the games go on, just like Roberson and everybody else, you expect to improve a little bit, but they're so thin. It's hard.
Yeah.
It affects the way Christmas plays right off the opening tip yesterday. You could see him not contesting shots. If Jeremy Grant, Dwan Coleman, you know, are on the roster, they're helping from the weak side. Roberson and Christmas can be a little more aggressive, and I don't know. It's tough. It's very frustrating, though, because we've been in this golden age of Syracuse basketball, and now the bottom has just kind of dropped out of nowhere. You know, and
it's a strange confluence of things, right? I mean, you got guys going pro that you didn't expect, and you've got guys getting injured, and, you know, Dewan Coleman's been out for 2 years, and you got guys that legitimately haven't panned out, Ron Patterson, BJ Johnson, you know, and so it's all come together in this one kind of perfect storm of a season.
And throw in an NCAA investigation.
I fully expect that thing will flip right back on its ear, and they'll be back in the top 15 again.
Yeah, by Christmas time next year. Hopefully. But who knows? I'm scared because we're putting a lot of stock on these freshmen coming in. Like I said a few minutes ago, who knows with these guys? You know, Paul Harris was supposed to be the next Carmelo Anthony. And,
yeah.
You never know.
And Bam doesn't have 970 wins for nothing, right? I mean, he's able to get victories from – and, you know, this team has never in Boeheim's career been, you know, consistently one of the most talented teams in the country. I mean, in a lot of years, they do a lot with not very much. And unfortunately, this year, they just couldn't do it. And I think it starts with the guard play. It starts with your point guard. When they've got a freshman point guard who's literally not ready for the rigors of the ACC, then, I mean, you see what happens.
Yeah, and Boeheim, and well, in most college basketball systems, but specifically Syracuse, that point guard's very important. We don't.
You know, Turricone's not a guy that can create his own shot, and Christmas obviously needs a point guard to get it to him himself, get it to him in the right spots. And Roberson's not creating his own shot very effectively. I mean, last year you had C.J. Fair, who, you know, he could always create his own shot. You could just dump it to C.J. You knew he was going to make a good decision. You knew he was going to get to the basket.
Yeah, and when he commanded attention, then Jeremy Grant's crashing the board on the weak side, and then Tyler Ennis always had the ball. You were comfortable. I mean, they were great.
But they had guys who could execute on their own. They didn't need a supporting cast to be able to be successful, and I think this one kind of does.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Well, before we take our commercial break here, I just want to talk for a quick second about what a joke Boston College is. 5,000 something fans for Syracuse in the Conte Forum. I mean,
we could talk for an hour about this topic. Why did the ACC ever get Boston College in the first place? What do they add? What do they contribute to this league?
They like the geography of it, but it's a joke when you consider those 5,000 fans. At least half of them were Syracuse fans.
Yeah,
it's such an
awful atmosphere, and you've been there, and I mean, we see it on TV. It's barely half full. It's the students aren't even anywhere to be found. I mean, the team's awful. They're wearing these goofy uniforms from 1973. I mean, it's just a joke. Everything's a joke about BC basketball.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I don't know what happened after the Craig Smith years, but they really fell right off the face, and they never capitalized any year that when they had, even when they had great players like Dana Barros and Michael Adams, and, you know, they never, Billy Curley, they never...
They'd have one or two good years, and then they'd fall on their face again for the next 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, and a good year.
Pretty long down cycle for them. I can't remember the last time they were even relevant.
In a good year for them, you know, Chris Dudley, I think, or Jared Dudley was pretty good when they had him. But even the best years for BC, you're talking about like a 15-ranked team that loses in the first or second round of the tournament. It's sad. They never did anything for the Big East. And they're certainly not doing anything for the ACC. And I fear for our program a little bit in the ACC that we're going to have similar effect of Boston College as a northern school. Now, our program's a lot stronger basketball than Boston College, so we have a lot more assets, I think, and we bring a lot more to the table. But still, you know, I worry a little bit, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now, what the basketball program at Syracuse is going to be like after this move to the ACC. But I guess only time will tell.
Did you see that the Notre Dame blog wrote something today about how they're questioning if the move to the ACC was any better for them, and how the ACC has proven to be a disappointment for them?
Yeah, well, they should shut up and come in for football too before they can say anything like that. Because, you know,
well, the general feedback is you should make a Sweet 16 since 1979.
Yeah, right.
Final eight. They've made two Sweet 16s since 1979. That's as far as they've got.
Yeah, from a basketball perspective,
you can have some of your own success and don't condemn anybody else.
Yeah, and from a basketball perspective, yeah, no, the move wasn't as good for Notre Dame or Syracuse or anybody. Basketball only. The Big East was just fine. So don't forget, it was football, you know, that drove a lot of this. And yeah, so I guess
Notre Dame shouldn't complain about that at all, because they're the ones that want their cake and eat it too on the football side.
True. Well, Brad, look, we're going to step aside for about 30 seconds, hear from our sponsors. When we come back, I'm sure you got some great trivia for us, so hang tight.
Find the partner you've been looking for. Welcome to Generations Bank.
The Newark Pilots. See tomorrow's Major League stars today. For more information, go to NewarkPilots.com.
Call the Finger Lakes Personal Injury Hotline at 315-568-0911. That's 315-568-0911. Madej, Maris, and Ricky, your hometown personal injury attorneys.
And welcome back to the Upstate Orange Podcast on FingerLakes1.tv and YouTube. Remember to subscribe on YouTube to FingerLakes1.com. We're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher.com. And you can browse directly to podcast.FingerLakes1.com/UpstateHoops. And you can subscribe to our feed there. Well, Brad, it's the time of the show where you ask our listeners, and usually me and Virk, tonight just me, trivia questions. Favorite part of the one of my favorite 5-10 minutes of the week. So what do you got for us this week, Brad?
All right, we have Rickin Christmas. We talked about how he's been the leader of this team, and he's the leading scorer in this team right now. They're averaging 17.7 points per game, and it made me wonder, where would he fall amidst the top scoring seniors in the history of this program?
Well, that's a good question.
So we've seen guys who have had high scoring seasons, but in a lot of cases, if you're a top scorer, you're probably not sticking around until senior year, especially in this day and age. And a guy who's shown the improvement of Rakeem Christmas, he's really sort of peaked this year, which is exactly what you'd expect from a senior. But think back to guys that have stuck around for 4 years and who your most prolific senior scorers have been.
Senior scorers, okay. Lawrence Moten's got to be up there. Are we looking for guys that score more than Rakeem is averaging right now? Is that what the question is?
Yeah, so that's generally what the list I have in front of me here.
How many people are on that list?
I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 guys.
Beheim era or all time?
That are at. This is all time.
Okay, well, I'm going to start.
There aren't very many that are pre-Beheim era.
One of them's got to be Dave Bing.
Dave Bing is correct. He averaged 28.4 as a senior, so he's got the highest scoring average of any senior in this program's history.
Okay, and then we got to have Lawrence Moten in there.
Lawrence Moten averaged 21.5 as a senior, so he's about fifth or sixth on this list.
Okay, so that's two.
I didn't order the list as much as I should have, but
well, that's fine. We just got to see if we can name nine of these guys. I'm gonna go with John Wallace.
John Wallace is correct. He has the most points of any senior. Actually, he has the most points in one season of any player in Syracuse history.
Played a lot of games that year.
A lot of games that year, 96. Mm-hmm. He averaged 22.2 points per game as a senior and 845 points in that season. So he was third ranked on points per game.
Now things are going to get difficult, Brad. A little more difficult, but I'm going to say Jerry McNamara.
That is incorrect.
Yeah. Well, let me throw out another one there that I was going to guess with, and that's Hakeem Warrick. He had a great senior season.
Hakeem Warrick is a good guess, yes. He had an excellent senior year. He averaged 21.4 points per game as a senior. So he's fourth or fifth on this list, it looks like.
So I think that we got four guys down, right? Or is that five?
For the record, Jerry McNamara averaged only 16 points a game as a senior.
You know, he was injured a lot. I mean, he had an injury hampered. He could have done better. How about Rafael Addison?
He's not on this list. As a junior, Raf Addison averaged 18.4. As a senior,
his senior year would have
17,
been
17, because Pearl Washington led the team in scoring that year with 17.
Yeah, and Pearl didn't ever hit a senior year, of course.
Right.
Okay, now we got to search a little bit for some guys like, I'm going to go with Damone Brown.
No, incorrect.
No? All right. I kind of like that guess.
There's two guys. There's actually three guys on this list that – four guys, I'm sorry, that would be our Boeheim era that will – if the season ended today, it would have higher points per game than Rakeem Christmas.
Sherman Douglas?
Or other guys you could guess.
Sherman Douglas?
Douglas is correct.
Nice.
Sherman Douglas averaged 18.2 as a senior.
Now, I kind of want to say Derek Coleman, and I kind of want to say Billy Owens. I'm going to say Billy Owens went pro after his junior year, so he doesn't count.
Billy Owens did not play as a senior, correct? Yeah,
so we got Coleman, and I don't really have confidence in that one. I gotta say Coleman. Let's get him out there.
Coleman is not.
Yeah.
So he did not average more than 17 as a senior.
Neither did Rick Jackson or Renze Onuwaku or Andy Routens or what about Leo Routens?
Incorrect.
Yeah, he did a three-category stat guy.
He was never a huge scorer.
Yeah.
I mean, just a great all-around player and one of the best assist guys of anybody in the front court. But, yeah, no, not a huge scorer.
Louis Orr.
Louis Orr is incorrect.
Roosevelt Bowie?
He was under 16 because Roosevelt Bowie led the team in scoring their senior year at 16.1.
So he's not the correct answer either.
No.
Jeez. Are all the remaining guys Boeheim era guys?
I mean, there's a couple that are pre-Boeheim, but you should. There's two or three more that are Boeheim era guys that you haven't named.
Yeah, now's where I get into this fog of just trying to go year by year and think of guys. and guys, I think about some of them I've come up with that they didn't have senior years; they went pro. I kind of want to say is Ryan Blackwell, but I don't think that's the case. Preston Shumpert's got to be one of them.
Preston Shumpert's a very good guess. 20.7 points a game as a senior.
Okay, so now that's six. We got three more to go.
I'm not even keeping track. There's two more that I would like for you to get. Both senior numbers that will be in excess of what Ricky and Christmas will finish the season at.
Hey, what about Ronnie Cicely?
Incorrect. Mm. Ronnie Cicely, as a senior, averaged 16.3.
I think CJ Fair is a decent guess, but I don't think he. I would guess he averaged like 16 something.
Yeah, 16 exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Now.
Think back. Early 90s.
So.
One of the most underrated Syracuse Orange men of the Boeheim era.
Well, now you got me intrigued. Not LaRon Ellis.
Not LaRon Ellis, no.
Most underrated guys at Boeheim's.
We've talked about him recently on the show, probably 4 or 5 weeks ago.
Dave Syok?
In trivia, he came up. No, not Dave Syok.
Jeez. Late
90s. This guy's senior year was 1992.
Senior year in 92, right as Wallace was coming in. So he is fresh. Wallace was a freshman when
first straddled the Wallace and Moten eras.
Otis Hill
or Wallace and Coleman eras. I meant to say.
Yeah, it couldn't be Otis Hill or Conrad McRae. They didn't score that much.
This guy averaged over 19 a game as a junior and a senior.
And I'm having trouble coming up with his name. How sad is that? At the risk of getting frozen into the studio tonight, I'm going to have to ask for some help here.
From Morgan City, Louisiana.
Oh, Dave Johnson, of course.
Dave Johnson, one of the most underrated Syracuse Orangemen of
all
time.
So underrated, I couldn't even remember him.
That guy could play.
Yeah.
I know, that's exactly evidence of his underratedness.
Dave Johnson.
And then one more senior who will have averaged more than Christmas.
In the Boeheim era.
In the Boeheim era, his senior year was 2007.
Would he have played then along with Devendorf and Flynn and Harris?
Yes.
2007, that would put him right around the old Terrence Robert, Darryl Watkins era too.
Precisely.
And it wasn't Roberts or Watkins, that's for sure, right?
Right. So who else from that infamous class?
Not Louis McCroskey. Oh, Demetrius Nichols.
Right.
Wow.
Correct. 18.9 points a game as a senior.
Huh. Well, you know, that's pretty impressive that Rakim is in that company of these guys we mentioned.
Right. If the season ended today, he would finish slightly ahead of Todd Bergen, who averaged 17.6 as a senior. So, you know, that's a pretty good top 10 right there.
Yeah.
I'm era seniors.
Especially when you consider that we are not scoring as many points as we did back then as a team.
Right.
You know, we've all of a sudden evolved into this low scoring.
When you think about the good seniors we've had since. I mean, CJ Fair, Rick Jackson, Chris Joseph.
Yeah, Lorenzo Onowaku, Andy Routins.
Yeah. Some very quality players that Christmas will be on a pretty elite list ahead of.
So is there pre-Boeheim guys that we didn't name?
There's a few, yeah. obviously Dave Bing, you mentioned. Greg Coles averaged 26.7 as a senior in 1972.
Greg Coles.
And Rudy Hackett in 75 in the final four season averaged 22.2 as a senior.
Wow. And that's the full list.
That's the full list of seniors.
Hey, I got to hand it to you, Brad. That's great trivia tonight. I don't know where you pulled that one out from, but I liked it. It was good. Good job. Stuff. Well, coming up on 10:56 Eastern time here on a Sunday night, let's move ahead to the list segment. And I want to know, for no particular reason other than we're talking Syracuse hoops, your top five most disappointing Orange Men of all time. And why don't you give one of your top five, and then I'll give one of my top five, and we'll go right down the list. And I'll let you start.
I'd say one guy that comes to mind pretty quickly is Josh Wright. Came in with a lot of acclaim, yeah. Local guy from Utica, and he did nothing and flamed out so quickly.
Yeah, he did. Ended up in Canada for a while. Yeah, it's funny. I didn't even have him on my list, but I should have. He's probably one of them. But I'll lead you off with my number. I'm going to go 5-1. I'm going to start at 5 and go with Fab Melo. And the reason why is obvious. He's still having detrimental effects on our program now. But as good as he made our team when he was on the court defensively, he killed us. You know, he ruined our chances in the NCAA tournament by not being eligible. Got into all sorts of trouble when he was here and, you know, was gone in 2 years. Very disappointing. That guy was supposed to be like the next Melo.
Yeah, I can't imagine you can find too many Syracuse fans anywhere that look back fondly at the words Fab Melo.
No. Absolutely not. Well, okay, give me another one of your guys.
Louis McCroskey.
You know what?
Came in on that post-national championship era team, and, you know, we talked about, there's a few of those guys that could probably make this list, but another guy flamed out. He had to transfer. He transferred to Manhattan or something.
Marist.
It was Marist. It was just a struggle for him from the beginning. Couldn't shoot, couldn't play. I mean, he was on that list last week that I mentioned of the guys that shot under 25%. It's just never really got anything done here.
Yeah, you know, he was kind of an idiot. Well, I'll come back at you then with a couple of his teammates. And I put these guys together as one, and that's the front court of Terrence Roberts and Darryl Watkins. And a lot of people will disagree with me on this one. They'll say, oh, no, the most disappointing of all time. But, oh, man, those guys were terrible. And
Darryl Watkins was an NBA guy somehow, but, man, I don't know how. He's seen his 4 years at Syracuse.
I can only give a little credit to Watkins because he went from a terrible, terrible, worst free throw shooter ever to come to Syracuse, which is saying a lot, to by his senior year being capable. So he showed a little bit of improvement there. But, boy, those guys were so frustrating. Watkins, remember how Watkins just couldn't dunk it? You know how many dunks that guy missed?
Yeah. I know. He's like 6'10".
That whole era was the most disappointing.
I never understood, because Terrence Roberts played for Bob Hurley at St. Anthony in New Jersey, and guys like that, you just always expect to be hard-nosed, play hard, you know, just fundamentally sound, and, man, I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, that whole era was disappointing. After the national championship, you know, it's another example. Hey, we got these great recruits coming in. We got this Terrence Roberts in. He's a left-hander, maybe the next Coleman, Darryl Watkins, Louis McCroskey. Oh, we're going to enter a golden age. Very disappointing. So, all right, give me another one, Brad.
As much as, we remember him fondly for various things, but just in terms of what could have been, Paul Harris.
I thought about putting Harris on here, and the reason I didn't is because I think that a lot of the disappointment came from overhyped, and that's not Paul Harris's fault. I think Paul Harris played good for us, and you know, when I think of Paul Harris, I think of the 6 overtime game, and you know, I agree, disappointment from what was expected. He was one of Boeheim's doghouse guys, but I
never left it. 3 years, he never left the doghouse.
But I fondly remember Paul Harris for the most part. I really do. But
yeah, I don't disagree with that. I remember it mostly fondly, but I do think, you know, you think of the guy, that Niagara Falls team with he and Johnny Flynn, and I mean that was a legendary New York State high school team, and Harris was the guy that had all the hype, and he was supposed to be the NBA guy, and, you know, a bit undersized, but I think they just, you know, had just the motor that wouldn't stop, and you know, could throw down on anybody, and you know, he had everybody trying to get him.
I thought about putting Flynn on this list, Brad. I actually thought about putting Flynn on this list because, you know, he was here for 2 years, no NCAA tournament, and gone. But, you know, I couldn't do it. He was too great of a player. I mean, he was phenomenal. The 6 overtime game alone is enough to keep him off any type of this list. But yeah, that's the same thing. That pair, you know, coming still in the shadow of that national championship team, had a ton of talent and didn't make the tournament. Flynn's 2 years he was here, which was amazing. Which brings me to my next guy, former teammate of Johnny Flynn, that's Donte Green. Very disappointing to me, only because he started all the dynasty talk, you know, the dynasty and the worst defender maybe ever to play at Syracuse, and then to come in and just be gone in 1 year. I know that guy, I wish we never recruited him in the first place. I wish he never played for Syracuse. So he's on my list of top five. Donte Green.
That was a guy. I mean, he came from Baltimore. There was comparisons with Carmelo, and he just, I don't think he ever had any desire to be a great Syracuse player. He just was
passing through,
putting his time in until he could get to the NBA.
Mm-hmm. Just passing through. Who's your next guy? We got two more each. Two more each. And so far we haven't doubled up on anybody, which is kind of amazing.
No. Tells you that we can make a pretty long list out of this.
A lot of disappointment.
Yeah. I would say, as much as I enjoyed watching him from time to time, Mookie Jones has got to be on a list like this, right?
Yeah, he's not on my list, but I can certainly see why he would be on there. Mookie Jones.
I mean, he's a legend in his own mind, but he could shoot it, but man, he did not give one crap about playing defense and wasn't really a great team guy. He just kind of did his thing.
Yeah, you know, a typical case of a guy who thinks he's better than he is and doesn't work to get better because he thinks he's already there, I think. That's what my take on Mookie Jones is. Hey, my number two guy. I have a funny feeling our number one guy might be the same, but we'll wait and see. My number two guy is Earl Duncan. And a lot of it's not his fault. He was heralded as the next Pearl, mainly because his name maybe rhymed with him. But I just remember here, you know, back when, geez, what were we, maybe fifth or so, we were probably seventh, eighth grade. And we hear Earl Duncan's coming, you know, he's going to be the next Pearl. And, well, guess what? We already had a guy named Sherman Douglas. And before long, Earl Duncan was off to Rutgers as a transfer. And you know, for a guy who was supposed to be the next Pearl, you know, he has zero legacy at Syracuse. So I got Earl Duncan on my list.
You know, it's funny with Earl Duncan, there was a bit of mystery about him, too, because he was a California guy. And, you know, Syracuse had had great success with getting Stevie Thompson out of California.
Yep.
And I think there was just always that, hey, West Coast guys, man, we get these guys in the dome, and then it's just gone, you know, and that's what we thought we were going to get with Earl Duncan, and no, it didn't happen.
Yeah, so who's you got two guys left. Oh, no, you got one guy left on your list. Who is it?
Yeah, so I will admit I went away from all the guys you have, and I know who you got for number one, and I don't think anybody would disagree with the number one guy on your list, but so I will let you go with that. But I've got one more guy on my list. He's not the most disappointing by any means, but he's one that I fear will make these lists in perpetuity, and that's DeJuan Coleman.
Oh, man, I hope you're wrong.
He's
really pulling for him.
I'm wrong, too. I really do. He's a hard luck guy, but, man, he came in with as much hype as anybody's coming to this program.
Recruited by
years,
Kentucky as well.
You know, it's one injury after another. And, you know, even when he was healthy, I don't think he was disappointing to a degree because, you know, we used to joke about how he couldn't, you know, he's 6'10", 280, and, you know, every little guard could knock the ball out of his hands when he's going up for a shot, you know, and that was always a struggle when he was healthy even, and who knows what we're going to get when he comes back next year, if he comes back next year. But
yeah,
if I'm wrong, but I would say on the basis of the 2 years, two or 3 years, I guess, that we've had him, 2 years, three, I couldn't even tell you now.
This was his third year.
Yeah, would have expected.
This was his third year at Syracuse. He was New York State Mr. Basketball in 2011, I think. Does that sound right? Or no?
Because he did play a full freshman year, and then he got injured halfway through his sophomore year, and then the junior year never happened. So yeah, you're right.
Oh boy. Well, you know, hoping that he's not on your list a couple of years from now. But right now, I can see why you put him on there. But number one on my list is one of my most despised Orangemen of all time, and that's Deshaun Williams, the guy who I in my mind single-handedly derailed a decent team in Preston Shumpert's senior year, just by being a jerk. You know.
Yeah. He could have been so much more. He was a selfish player, didn't really care about the team. Was a bad guy off the court, got into trouble. Ended up transferring where to Iona, and then he flamed out of there too. Like, I think he got kicked off that team.
You're right. He did. He did okay for a while, but, you know, he's not a good teammate, you know, Deshaun.
Mm-hmm. Well, some guys aren't.
You know, well, I wonder where
Deshaun. Don't have him on your team, but.
Yeah. And I guess one reason that is so disappointing is because he certainly had the talent to, you know, be a great player. He reminded me a lot of Deion Waiters, actually, you know, that type of talent. But
yeah, both bringing their own baggage to the court, too.
Right. So there you go. There's in this winter doldrums of no postseason, let's talk about more disappointment. Well, I don't know why I want to do it to myself, but memories of disappointing players. But that brings us to two for the road before we get out of here. And this is one question that I'm a little concerned about. I have this feeling that I would not be surprised or shocked if at some point over the next several months, Boeheim just says, I'm hanging it up. I don't think it's going to happen, but I wouldn't be shocked. I really think he wants to go to 1,000 at least, and he still has that competitive fire. But with all the crap this season with the NCAA and Bernie Fine, and you know, I wouldn't be shocked if Boeheim was to out of nowhere in mid-April say, I'm hanging it up, retiring. What do you think? Is that crazy talk?
Yeah, I disagree with you. I would be shocked. Because I do think he's got that 1,000 win number in the back of his head. And if he's not there, I don't think he's – I think it's a bit of a, you know, unfinished business, I think, a little bit. And, he's still got a passion for it. He's still got a fire for it. I don't see him – it just doesn't seem like it's him to just sort of walk away, you know. And I don't – with the group that he's got coming in, I think this season will have left a very sour taste in his mouth. That I don't think he would want to end on this kind of note.
Yeah, you know, I agree with everything you're saying. I don't know what it is. I just got this feeling. That it could be a possibility where, even a couple months ago, I wouldn't have thought that for a second. So nothing based on that other than just this kind of sick feeling. Maybe it's just all the bad news this winter with surrounding Syracuse. You know, let's hope not. I really don't think so. I just would not be shocked. I would be a little surprised, but not shocked. I think I don't know why, but I agree. He probably wants 1,000. He probably wants 1,000. Who wouldn't when you get that close?
Yeah, if you've been that far.
Although, who is it? Bobby Knight that was like one or two wins shy of 1,000. He was very close, but not by his choice, right? You know, he was ousted from Indiana and then Texas Tech. Okay, well, let's go to
get rid of Jim Boeheim.
Yeah, let's go to two for the road, number two, and that's we need predictions. We got two games this week: Louisville coming to the dome, Pitt coming to the dome. If we want any shot at 20 win season, we better win both of these games, right? Not just one. One's probably not good enough. These are two of our. We have three home games remaining, and two of them are coming up this week, Wednesday, 7 o'clock, on ESPN. Against Louisville, and then Saturday at noon against Pitt on the ACC Digital Network. I need predictions. Let's start with Louisville.
Louisville, I don't like Syracuse's chances in this game. I do expect it to be low scoring, and in some of these Syracuse-Louisville games we've seen over the last several years, you know, they, that they're always low scoring. You got Patino knows how to attack that zone, but it just grinds the game to a halt. And so, you know, those types of games can come down to one or two possessions. And so I do think that Syracuse has a decent chance in this game, but I just think Louisville is a better team. I think they've got better guard play. I think they're a little bit more.
NC State knocked them off this week, right? Didn't NC State knock off Louisville? NC State knocked off Louisville.
They beat them at Louisville.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I'm going with the Syracuse.
So, yeah, I mean that's there's a chance there, but I think Louisville 62-58.
Syracuse 75, Louisville 68. Okay.
All right.
Pitt coming to the dome. What do you think about this one? Now, Pitt just beat North Carolina, so it's crazy, crazy ACC, I guess. I'll
tell you what. If Syracuse expects to win 20 games, this is the game they absolutely positively have to have.
It's the only one on the season.
Game on the slate between now and the end of the season.
It's the only one they're probably going to be favored in.
Probably right.
Maybe Louisville might be close to a pick, but Pitt, I think, other than that, you know, we're not going to be favored when we host Notre Virginia, and we're certainly not going to be favored for any of these road games, even NC State. So you're right. It is a must-win, so that's why I think we're going to win a low-scoring affair. We're going to pull this one out. It's going to be close, as all Syracuse Pitt games in the Dome tend to be. They sometimes kill us in Pitt, but I'm going to say 56-54. Syracuse wins.
Okay. You know, I think in this one, I do like Syracuse in this game. I like it a little bit higher scoring. It was close to in the 80s last time. So I think Syracuse 76-71.
All right. Good. Well, we agree on that.
We need it.
Well, we'll be back, Brad, next Sunday to talk about those two games and then also preview Notre Dame and the second game at Duke. You know, the way I'm looking at it here, we have 1, 2, 3 more episodes of this podcast left before we hang it up, because when Syracuse game at NC State comes to a close, so does their season, and the next day we'll have our final episode of the podcast. Normally we've gone straight through to late early April, but this year we're cutting it short. What else are we going to talk? What are we going to talk about? You know what's really disappointing is we don't get to do the Selection Sunday show this year that we've enjoyed doing in the past a couple years.
We can't do an ACC ACC tournament preview show.
Yeah, all that.
Well, let's talk about that.
So we're just going to hang. We're going, just like Syracuse. We're going away for the month of March, unfortunately, but we will be back next year with renewed expectations and. Hopefully, this NCAA stuff behind us. But, yeah, it's sad but true, Brad. Sad but true. But, of course, you know, we had no problem filling an hour here without Virk, and even when with us on probation and no talk about tournament bubble or any of that, we still can talk Cuse basketball for – we could probably go a second hour if we want, but it is getting late here on Sunday night, so thanks for hanging out again tonight, Brad. And, you know, next week we'll be back with Virk and – hopefully talking about two Syracuse wins.
Yes.
All right. Well, hey, thanks to everybody for hanging out with us tonight on the Upstate Orange Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed on iTunes, Stitcher.com, on YouTube, or via RSS. We're online at podcast.fingerlakes1.com/upstatehoops. And we'll be back again next Sunday night at 10 o'clock. So for the professor, Brad Connor, and Matt Verkey, who's not here tonight, I'm Jim Sinicropi. Have a great week, and let's go Orange.